Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's good to have you with us. It's a Monday version of the show once again. Big week for golf. Big week, really, for the sport in so many different ways. But the Genesis Invitational was wonderful. We've got Bernhard Langer to talk about. We do have some Liv to talk about, I suppose. But there's a lot going on in the sport, and a lot of it has been in terms of momentum, positive, uplifting, fun, and interesting. Some negatives, of course, and we'll touch on those a little bit. But there's a lot to get to, and we're looking forward to speaking with you about it over these next 40, 45 minutes. You can get a hold of me, Ryan Ballengee, on Twitter, at Ryan Ballengee. Same thing with Facebook and Instagram, although candidly, I don't post much on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's mostly about my kids. So if you want to hear about golf from me, Twitter's the place to be. You can also follow me on YouTube. I do some stuff around golf on my personal page with vlogs and equipment and other stuff. So if you're interested in that, check it out. I would appreciate it as well. And then golfnewsnet.com is where most of my written work is, if not all of it, although some is in our newsletter twice weekly, The Break. And then we have Golf News Net Radio, which is available through iHeart and TuneIn. All right, so we had a huge week for the PGA Tour, and huge on a number of different levels. Let's start with the tournament golf piece of it. The Genesis Invitational was great. It was just fabulous. You had 40 of the world top 50 competing. You had Tiger Woods making his first PGA Tour start since the Open in July. You had a $20 million purse, which obviously was a big talking point. But I think because of the quality of field, it didn't become quite as big of a talking point, at least for me, until the very end, when Max Homa had to get somehow home in four shots on the final hole to avoid falling into a second-place tie with Patrick Cantlay, which made him play the final hole for effectively $400,000, which is pretty wild to think about. If you've ever thought about that in your entire life, if you've ever played for like $5, that gets your heart going just a little bit. Now imagine it for $400,000. And yes, I know these guys are absolutely rich, you know, in that top 20, top 30 group of players. But still, $400,000 is $400,000. It's not nothing. But Max Homa has also been on an incredible run. Really wanted to win this tournament, and I'm sure he was thinking about that more than trying to preserve second place for $400,000 more. That probably did not come into the equation. But for me, I started to think about it, and I'm sure looking back on it, I probably thought, wow, that par actually meant something. Anyhow, Jon Rahm is the winner. Wins third time in 2023. Second designated event that he has taken. He was the beneficiary of Colin Morikawa. Went in the bed a little bit at the Century Tournament of Champions. So he has now won three times this year. It's February the 20th. He has made nearly $10 million in official prize money. He is almost certainly going to win again sometime this season. I don't know when, but this feels like one of those kind of all-timer runs. It's starting to feel that way. Maybe not a VJ 9-win season run. Maybe it is. But he has won five of his last nine tournaments played worldwide. And in that stretch, he is triple digits under par, something like 110 under par. And he's finished no worse than eighth. And frankly, the last two tournaments, he could have won those too. He could have won at Torrey. Got off to a bad start in the final day. That cost him. Got off to an okay start in the final day at Phoenix, but just couldn't build anything to catch Scheffler and make it really interesting. So he kind of became a little bit of an also-ran, but still had a great week there too. And it's, I mean, this is one of those heaters where, and Scottie Scheffler went on one of these last year, although in a much more truncated period of time, really starting at Phoenix and going through the Masters. This feels like something that could be a whole year-long thing. And of course, things can change. Of course, he could get injured. All kinds of other stuff can happen in life that maybe makes this heater that he's on cool down a little bit. But you can't expect anything worse than a top five finish from him right now, which is pretty incredible. If you want to translate that into betting terms, he is 7-1 to win the Masters, which is getting close to like Tiger-like numbers to win the Masters. That's kind of absurd. You pretty much can't bet him to win a PGA Tour event because, you could. And people do, but the number for most people isn't worth it for the amount of money you might wager, for the number of days you might be locked up with that money. But the market has made it very clear, and my models make it very clear, he is the best golfer in the planet, And I don't even think it's all that close. And the only reason it took until this week to get back to number one in the world, given he's won five times in the last nine starts, is the change in the official world golf ranking. We talked a little bit about this, but the points that Rahm earned for winning those tournaments, one, a couple of them were on the DP World Tour, and they weren't deep fields by any stretch of the imagination, but those points were depressed. And then the points that he earned for winning the American Express and for winning the Century Tournament of Champions were slightly depressed too, compared to prior years because of the change of the formula. So now he gets a whole ton of points. He gets nearly 70 points for winning this week, and that gets him to number one in the world. So it took five wins to do it. Similar kind of thing for Scottie Scheffler, right? Took four big wins, huge wins, to get to number one in the world in short fashion, and then held on to it for a while until Rory McIlroy came and took it away from him with a great run of golf as well. Multiple wins in that stretch of time. And now you've got three players in the last 3 weeks who have been world number one. You had Rory, who gave way to Scheffler, who gave way to Rahm. Rahm's probably going to have it for a while. Certainly going to have it after this week because of the number of points that he gained. And then we can kind of see what happens at the Masters if one of those three guys win. We do have a pretty substantial stretch of golf coming up. And we've had the last 2 weeks, which were great. We'll touch on the value of the designated event here shortly. But after this week at Honda, you've got the Arnold Palmer Invitational, another one, another designated tournament. You've got the Players, the richest single event prize on the PGA Tour, $25 million. That's another one. Then you've got Tampa at Innisbrook, a little bit of a, I won't say a letdown tournament, because you're still going to probably have 10 to 12 of the world top 50 playing there in a good tournament, but it's not an elevated event. It's not a designated event. And then you go from there to a WGC. So you've got a WGC, probably the last Dell Technologies match play, but you've got that after the Valspar. Then you've got the Valero Texas Open, which you're going to get some decent players for because some guys just like to play the week before a major. And then you've got the Masters. And we're all kind of assuming the Masters is going to be a $20 million tournament, even if it's not still a Masters. And then the week after that, you've got another designated event. That's Heritage. You've got Harbortown for $20 million. So a lot of the players who played the Masters are playing the next week too in Hilton Head, which is crazy. So in the stretch between now and April the 16th, we just had two elevated events. We're going to have another next week, and then another after that. That's four. Skip a week. That's five. Skip a week. Six, seven. So seven elevated tournaments that started, or designated tournaments that started from Phoenix moving to Heritage. And then you get a little bit of time off. You have the Zurich Classic, the team event, which I frankly, as an observer of the PGA Tour, really interested to see the field because of so many designated tournaments, and you've got just before at Harbortown. So will you get quality players in this event, given that, you know, these guys just played for like $150 million in designated tournament money and major championship a couple weeks prior? There's got to be a place you stop. There's got to be a place you rest on the schedule. And I know it will change next year because Heritage and Phoenix may or may not be designated tournaments. Sounds like there's some wind pushing toward what we talked about, having Pebble be a designated tournament. Maybe you'd have Heritage not be one. There is also going to be some movement in the schedule because the Dell Technologies match play, as we know it, is going away. Maybe just going away, period. Does something take its place? What does that look like? Is that Houston? Is that a CJ Cup that moves around? Does it stay match play or not? Does it stay stroke play or not? We'll see about that. And then there's some intrigue too on the back end of this, because there is a report out there that the PGA Tour is very close to signing a deal to having an event in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, starting next year. Now, the report says it's going to be in May. Well, if you look at May, you've got Wells Fargo, not going anywhere, designated event this year, it's going to stick around. Byron Nelson's not going anywhere. PGA Championship, obviously not going anywhere. And Colonial's not going anywhere. So those tournaments are going to be there, which means the one tournament that you could see going away pretty easily is the Mexico Open of Vedanta. And this may be just a couple of year thing to round out the contract that Grupo Salinas had with the PGA Tour to run the WGC in Mexico And they said, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to promote our own property in Vedanta, and we want to have that tournament for a couple of years to round out the contract. Well, if that's the end of that contract, then all of a sudden you have an opening on the schedule that can be Myrtle Beach, and then you create a little bit of a Carolina swing here because, I guess it's just really a Southeast swing, but you would have Heritage at Hilton Head, then you would have New Orleans, then you wouldn't have to go to Mexico, you would go to Myrtle Beach, then you would have Wells Fargo, so you kind of have like a Carolinas-ish swing with three tournaments in the Carolinas and, you know, Georgia and Louisiana in there, which is a nice little run. So I think that's where things are going, but what we've set up so far with these designated tournaments has been wonderful. It really has been good, and I tweeted about this. Phoenix was always great. You may not love Phoenix for what it is, but it always attracted a great field because people wanted to kind of take part in the madness a little bit, and it has a ton of local support. Anybody could play in that tournament, and you'd still get a ton of people coming to it, having a good time for what it is. But it felt like the party atmosphere meant even more, or maybe competed with in a way, the great field that they had in Phoenix. And I think that that kind of maybe lifted the value of the party atmosphere of, hey, we're celebrating this incredible field. And yeah, we're, you know, tons of people are drinking Coors Lights and stuff and Ultras, but it felt like an elevation of that tournament. Got the same thing from Riv. Riv is the best course on the PGA Tour. It's, I don't think, even all that close, to be honest with you, although you might find some Sawgrass defenders out there. But the golf course was always great. Tiger Woods' involvement in the last few years has meant a whole lot to this tournament, just taking it to another level. So it was already going to get a good field. Throw in the extra money, you get a couple extra commits. You got 40 of the world top 50. There are some DP World Tour guys, and we'll talk about them in a little bit. Thomas Peters, Adrian Meronk, Minwoo Lee, that weren't able to get into the tournament, and that's because they aren't PGA Tour regulars. The whole top 125 of eligible players from last year was in that lineup, and there was no way they were just going to oversubscribe it for those players. So if you look at the eligible players that were going to compete, and you throw out the likes of Cam Smith and there's really not many, Joaquin Niemann, not many guys left. As Ryan Fox is 32 in the world, Tommy Peters, as I mentioned, Minwoo Lee's in there. That's Amito Pereira still in the top 50, although that's about to drop out after this week. So if you looked at who was eligible, I mean, everyone that was eligible was in. So that's why you got that many players, you know, the top 50 players competing. The other guys were just, they couldn't play, or a couple guys didn't, but not many. I mean, you pretty much got everybody. Taylor Gooch is still in there. So that is a big deal. I mean, that it's going to mean something for this PGA Tour schedule moving forward. Yes, you're going to have weeks like this week, Honda Classic, 10 of the 9 or 10 of the world top 50 are playing, and it's going to feel weak by comparison. I understand that. But there's still plenty of room for tournaments like that on the PGA Tour schedule that can do good in communities, that can have good purses, that can have solid enough fields. And these are tournaments that can get occasional support from top players because they still have to commit to three, the PIP earners, player impact program earners from that $100 million prize pool, still have to compete in three tournaments that aren't in the designated portion of the schedule. So those three tournaments could include this one, whatever that looks like moving forward, could include any other non-designated event on the schedule, your hometown event, your fifth major of sorts, your sixth major, I suppose, whatever you want to call it, of sorts, and one other that you just kind of need to rotate through. So that means a lot for the schedule. I mean, we just went over this stretch from February through April is ridiculous. And then in May, you get a designated event and a major. Then in June, you've got a designated event at Memorial, the U.S. Open, and the Travelers. So three designated tournaments. You almost kind of feel bad for the Canadian Open, which probably should be a designated event, by the way. Rocket Mortgage is in there, which is an $8.8 million purse. Again, not nothing, but it's just not going to get the same kind of field, although Tony Finau is defending champion, so at least you have that. And then you get to July, And July is really the only month with one that's coming up with one designate, not, you know, one designated tournament. That's the Open Championship. The rest of it is take a breather. You've still got the Scottish Open for $9 million as a precursor to the Open, but everything else is kind of a little bit of a breather. And then August is banger after banger after banger because of the FedEx Cup playoffs. You got 70, 50, 30. Purses of $20 million for the first two, an effective purse of $75 million for the second one or the final one. And then you stop. And we don't know what the fall is going to look like or what that's going to mean, but pretty amazing stuff for the PGA Tour. I want to touch on Max Homa a little bit. I really enjoy watching him play golf. And I know that's not a surprising take from a guy talking about golf on the internet who spends a lot of time on Twitter. Golf Twitter loves Max Homa. But what I really, really appreciated is something we talked about at the beginning of the show. That Max Homa played the 72nd hole trying to win the golf tournament. Because he wanted to win it in front of his friends and family. He won this tournament previously, and it was a big deal for him. But he didn't get to do it with a lot of fans because it was still relatively early pandemic era. I guess middle of it. But there weren't a lot of fans. And for him, he wanted the emotion, the opportunity to win in front of friends and family and didn't get to do it. And he really wanted to do it yesterday and just came up a little bit short. And he played 18 knowing he needed something spectacular to happen and for Rahm to stumble to force a playoff. And he went for the chip in on 18. That was never going in. I mean, it was fun to watch. It came in hot. It was never going in. But what I really liked about that was that he played to win. That he knew, I'm sure he knew somewhere that there was one stroke between him and Cantlay for a lot of money for second solo or second tied, or if something went horribly wrong, fourth place tied or third place tied, you know, something like that. And so on one hand, you got to think a guy that's come this far from being a stroke away from losing his PGA Tour card to a guy that's nearly a six-time winner on the PGA Tour. On one hand, you would think, well, he would go back to thinking about the days when he struggled and that $400,000 could mean something, secure second place. But no. And the cool, I really enjoyed this about CBS's coverage, is they let the caddy player conversation play out, and that told you the story. Because Max was talking with his caddy. His caddy asked him, like, look, are you trying to make birdie here, or are you just trying to make par? And Max says birdie. He's trying to make a score here that will make Rahm think. Maybe he three putts. And so then the caddy says, okay, well, I'm going to go clear all these people if they're bothering you. He said, yep. It clears them more back. And Max tries to hit the shot. And yeah, he doesn't pull it off. But he still gets up and down, makes the par. And it felt like, in a way, people were happier for him that he finished giving them a thrill. That he almost chipped in. With, you know, at least looked like it was going to go in. It wasn't, but... And then to make the par putt. And I don't know how many people think about this kind of stuff, but I did because I had the ticket on him to win this tournament when he did. But the three-footer that he missed on the 72nd hole that would have allowed him to win the tournament outright, I thought about that as he was making the par putt to finish second solo. I don't know if he did. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. And maybe he wouldn't cop to it either way. I think he would. But that was something I was thinking about. And I wonder if people who are sitting on the little natural amphitheater they have behind the 18th hole at Riv, whether they were thinking about it. You know, he missed an important putt here a couple of years ago, and that was to win outright. And he got there eventually, but you know, that was something he thought about, probably. And the crowd response, obviously, for a California guy to finish solo second behind a guy who's clearly the best player in the world right now. It was almost like a you won by losing kind of thing. And he got very emotional after the fact, got choked up and said, I'm going to win this tournament again. I want to win it in front of my friends and family. It means a lot to him. And I think that's something we all want to see as golf fans. And I know of my era, you know, the Tiger Woods era, there were a lot of Tiger copycats who loved to show no emotion, almost less emotion than Tiger, because they thought that was the secret to Tiger doing well, was being emotionless, not necessarily knowing how to harness your emotion, like Tiger did. And it created a lot of guys that weren't unlikable, but weren't memorable in the same way as they are now. And you've got guys now who know how to be emotional and know how to show that they care without necessarily always being robotic looking. And Max goes from looking determined when things are going really well to visibly disappointed when things don't, but he still perseveres. And I think that's something I really, really like about him, is the way that he's honest and real. And that's what you want from your athletes, I think. That's all you can ask for. And yes, that will lead to criticism. And yes, that will lead to people not liking you. Yes, that will lead to people not liking what you did. And we'll talk about that in a minute with Tiger. But it's better to leave it out there and let people figure it out. And invite people in to your thought process and what you're thinking and feeling out there. Golf is a lonely game. It's a really lonely game at a competitive level, because there's really no one that can help you. Your caddy can talk to you. You can have fans cheering for you, but no one can do it for you. No one can walk you through the thought process. They can help you, but they can't get you to the right decision. They can't help you execute the shot. They can't stand over the putt for you and tell you you've got a 78% chance of making this 5-footer. None of those things are things you can control. And so I think by letting people in, pulling it back a little bit and saying, here's what I'm really thinking about. Here's what I'm thinking about when I'm trying to hit that shot. Here's what I'm thinking about now that I've lost or won. All of that stuff. I think that has been a net positive for golf. And yes, they're not Tiger. They're not. But having a wide crop of players with different personality types and players that are likable, I think is a good thing. It can be nothing but good for golf. Now, I've really wrestled with talking about this, and I'm going to keep it brief, about Tiger and the tampon thing with Justin Thomas. So Tiger outdrives Justin Thomas, and as Tiger is wont to do, likes pranks, likes to joke. And so he got out a tampon out of his bag, I'm assuming, and put it in Justin Thomas's hand as they were walking down the fairway. And Getty Images caught it, took pictures of it, and Rick Gaiman, who does work for CBS Sports in his own site, Rick Rungood, does a good job there. He tweeted the pictures, and no commentary, just this is what he did, and I think that was probably the right thing to do. And of course, naturally, it turned into a 24-hour, 36-hour crisis. Tiger apologized after his next round, saying he didn't want to offend anybody. There were columns written. There were people on both sides of interpreting this and saying, oh, well, you know, you're making a big deal out of nothing, and why can't we make this joke? And then people on the other side of, why would you do this? Why would you want to send this kind of message, whether you thought no one would see it or not? And I don't struggle with this, because this is not something I would do. This is not how I think about things. But I also struggle with it because it's not a struggle for me on message. I mean, I get Tiger's trying to make a joke and have some fun, and I can support trying to have fun. And there are a lot of people who will make jokes that in public seem inappropriate, but in private will be laughed at. And this is probably one of those. But at the same time, my overwhelming thought here is Tiger knows all eyes are on him all of the time. And he knows that's not changing, whether he's 47 or 22 or anywhere in between. And so his actions are always under a huge microscope. So I'm not sure if he figured this wasn't going to be seen, wasn't going to be caught in some fashion and lead to this reaction or what. But it led to a 24 to 36 hour kind of derailment of this tournament that fortunately got back on track, because we had a really attractive finish between Rahm and Homa. And Tiger played some good golf too. I mean, it was the golf that I saw from Tiger Woods was really fun to watch. I mean, the Thursday round, that was lovely. Friday, you know, not as great. Struggled to make the cut, but got there. Saturday was tremendous. Sunday seemed out of gas. And the Thursday entertainment was through the roof. Saturday was lovely. And I hope that people will take more away from the golf in the end than a foolish act that I don't think he ever intended folks to see. But hopefully that doesn't happen again. I mean, people have different senses of humor, right? And most people who have different senses of humor don't ever come under a huge public microscope for any kind of version of their humor. But hopefully it doesn't come up again. Meanwhile, Tiger said he's going to consider playing another tournament between now and the Masters. I would assume he's considering either Arnold Palmer Invitational or the Players. My guess would be the Players. If he's looking at doing that, that's just, again, a few weeks away. It's not very far away. So if he's looking at doing that, those are your two options. Might see him again. He did say that this week was more draining for him than maybe he let on. And I think that's probably often the case for Tiger. And sometimes when things don't go well, you kind of see a little bit more emoting of things that aren't going right. And that's just anybody. That's every human being, I think. You kind of let on more when things aren't going well. Like, hey, things aren't great because of X, Y, and Z. But also, I think being a tournament host is, for him, a really enjoyable experience. He gets to spend time with up-and-coming players between the College Showcase and the Charlie Sifford exemption. Shout out to Marcus Byrd, who's a DC guy, got the Sifford exemption. Made a good accounting for himself on Thursday and Friday. And also gets to kind of be thought of in a way, I don't know, it's not exactly the same as being a competitor when you're also the host. And I think he gets some enjoyment out of that. Probably a little bit of extra pep in his step. And certainly playing well Thursday and Saturday and threatening to make the cut and then doing so on Friday. I think... probably also gave him a little bit of extra buzz. But after each day, I'm sure it hasn't been easy. It's not a hard walk at Riviera, but competitive golf is just draining as it is, whether you're young or old. So I would anticipate this is, again, we've talked about this before, I think, either on Twitter or here or somewhere over the years. But this is what Tiger is. And you're not going to see him play 10 tournaments a year. You're going to get six, maybe, out of him that don't require a cart, so we'll leave the PNC Championship aside. That's a 36-hole scramble with his son. Totally different element, 72 holes walking against the best players in the world. But, that all said, the game is there. I mean, he is hitting the ball with a ball speed in the mid-170s. He's putting it out there. Hit some lovely cuts, lovely shots, good putting, not the best chipping, but good putting. Good ball striking. I mean, it just is a joy to watch him when he's in his element and doing it right. And that's what he was doing on Thursday and Saturday. Just really enjoyable golf to watch. Golf that, frankly, most people can't and won't play because they want to rely on the one shot or two shots that they do really, really well and then just leave everything else in the bag unless they absolutely need it. Tiger obviously prefers a fade because it's a little bit easier with his legs. But he can hit all the shots. And as someone who has played golf for nearly 30 years now, the older I get, the more I'm interested in working the ball. Low, high, as best I can. Left, right, straight. Doing a little bit of everything. Because you've hit enough shots well or hit enough shots the same. You want to see something look a little bit different, I think. And I get a real high level of enjoyment out of watching players, and not just Tiger, any player that can do that. So, great week for Riviera, great week for the Genesis Invitational. Leads to a lot of momentum in the next month, month and a half. We'll have plenty to work out on that front. And then you've got LIV, and we'll talk about LIV briefly here. So, LIV is going to kick off its second season this week. They are at Mayakoba, which is a former PGA Tour venue, and the venue, El Chameleon, is hosted, or is designed rather, by Greg Norman, who is the CEO of LIV Golf, as you probably know. And they clearly got out the checkbook and said to the resort, hey, we're willing to host this event here. We're willing to host our whatever sponsors they've got, you know, our VIPs, whatever the Saudis want to do with this event. And so we want to take a PGA Tour venue. We want to take a DP World Tour venue off their schedule and snicker at it. So they came up with Mayakoba and Valderrama in Europe. And now they're live venues. So that first event is this week. And they have announced their schedule. They have announced, I think, most of their teams. Although I don't think they have announced everything yet today. They said that on Monday they would announce the remaining four teams in their league. And they pushed that back from, I think it was supposed to be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then they wound up not doing that. Instead, they said, hey, we're going to do our reveals on Thursday, Friday, and then Monday all of a sudden. And then reports came out over the course of the weekend that the players that we didn't know they would be adding would be Danny Lee, Dean Burmester, and Thomas Peters. And Thomas Peters is kind of interesting because he's world number 34. Not necessarily that interesting for that part, but because he tweeted earlier in the week complaining that he couldn't get into the Genesis Invitational, even though he's a top 50 player in the world. And then the report comes out, hey, he's signing with LIV. So maybe a different kind of tell, complaining about not being able to play on the PGA Tour in the designated events. Now you're going to LIV. So another one of those kind of weird tells where you're like, okay, yeah, I guess. But LIV has not shared their final four teams that were supposed to come out today. Those four teams' names are the High Flyers, which is Phil Mickelson's team, the Ironheads, which is Kevin Na's team, which I can't believe that's something. The Range Goats, which is the name for Bubba Watson's team. And then Stinger, which is Louis Oosthuizen's team, the South African team. So I assume that means Dean Burmester will be on that team. I don't know that to be true, but that's the case. And then there's some reporting from James Corrigan, who's done a great job on this subject matter throughout the course of it, but that there's some talk there may be a corporate sponsor announced this week of some kind. Who knows who that could be? Are they endemic to golf? Are they otherwise? I mean, is the MyPillow guy? You don't know. No one knows. So we'll see what happens there. And then we'll see if people watch on the CW. This, again, they broadcast on the CW app on Friday and then on the CW affiliate network on Saturday and Sunday. I'm sure there'll be people paying attention, but I don't really know what happens here with LIV. As I tweeted, I don't think the signings they've announced, barring any surprises, I mean, there could be some, you never know, but the signings that they've announced or that have trickled out are not needle movers. And if they're not moving the needle with more players, is that because the players that they've just gotten who they're going to get? Like everyone else, like, hey, you know, we've got these $20 and $25 million tournaments on the PGA Tour, $100 million pit program, $75 million probably going up for the FedEx Cup. If you look at the course of all of those tournaments combined, effectively 17 tournaments of $20 million, that's $340 million. And then you've got $100 million for the PIP, and you've got $80 million-ish for the FedEx Cup. You're basically at LIV money on the PGA Tour now in terms of total prize money available. Yes, you have more players. Yes, there's a cut. Yes, they're not 54 holes, but you get access to the majors. You get about the same amount of money. You could play more often if you want. You get world ranking points. I think that kind of stems the tide. Oh, by the way, you won't lose your access to any of the other tours that are kind of supporting the PGA Tour. And you won't be necessarily caught up in some kind of legal issue if you ever want to come back. And I think that's probably going to stem the tide for most players at this point. We'll see. Of course, things can change. But obviously, if this is the group, if this is the signings that they have for the year, you're really going to have a hell of a year on the business side. You're going to have lots of people tune in on the CW, which I cannot believe I'm still saying that. But you're going to have a lot of people tune in on their broadcast, on their American television broadcast, because there's no more YouTube. That's gone. I thought that was actually way more convenient than the CW, if I'm being truthful. But You've taken that away. So you've got to crush it on the CW. You've got to sell some kind of corporate sponsorships that aren't just like laughable companies, like are legitimate companies that aren't wholly owned by Saudi Arabia or Qatari or any of the Saudi Arabians' allies in the Middle East. You can't have that. It has to be looking like a legitimate product that's really interesting and good. And we'll see what that looks like. I mean, obviously I have my opinions, but there are opportunities out there for Liv to potentially make some inroads. But I think at this point, you've probably made up your mind. You've probably decided whether you care about this product or not. And there aren't going to be a whole lot of converts one way or the other. So does that mean much more for Liv? Or does that mean they've kind of reached their ceiling 1 year in? And if they have, do the Saudis say at the end of this year, look, yeah, we've only spent like $4 billion out of our 700 billion PIF money, but we aren't making it back. No one seems to care beyond kind of Greg Norman's hardcore believers and some other collection of folks that are fans. If they're not watching on TV, if they aren't getting franchise interest, which we've seen some upheaval in the C-suite because of that lack of interest, do you just keep spending money, like throwing good money after bad? Or what? I don't know, but it seems like they've cleared the decks here for Norman to try to figure this out. And if he doesn't, then they can all jump ship and go, oh, that was Greg's fault. We gave him all the power. We gave him all the resources. He failed. It's time to go. And if that's the case, then golf gets even more interesting, because how do these people come back to the ecosystem of the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour? No idea. Not a clue. So that's a whole other set of discussions to potentially have for the long haul. But that's kind of where I think things are at with Liv at this juncture of the game. And if that's the case, then I'm not convinced that means a whole heck of a lot. Last topic for this week's show is a little bit of, I don't know if people are going to love this or not, but I think it's very interesting. I'll put it that way. Bernhard Langer tied the PGA Tour champions all-time wins record on Sunday. Won the Chubb Classic for the fifth time, I think like the fourth different venue, at 65, almost 65 and a half years old, finally ties the 45 win number that Hale Irwin set. What was that? 25, 30 years ago? I mean, just an incredible run of golf for Bernhard Langer, who, by the way, won for the 12th time in his 60s yesterday. And yes, I know there are still a lot of people out there who are upset that they think Bernhard Langer is anchoring his putter, and we can have that discussion another time. But for a guy to have this kind of longevity, and frankly, interest in having longevity at this stage of his career, I think is inspirational and really fascinating. He's accomplished so much in golf. He's a multi-time major champion. He is arguably the greatest 50-plus golfer to have ever lived. He contended in the Masters, was in a final group, right? Next to final group or something. Less than a decade ago, he was doing that. So it really is amazing what he has accomplished in his life and his career. And then to have seen it through to this point, I think is really cool. He talked about the Chubb Classic was played at Tiburon Golf Club, another Greg Norman jam. And it's a tight golf course. It's not easy to drive. You can really get yourself into a whole lot of trouble on the course that they played there. And he was talking about the importance of finishing the deal and not letting those bad thoughts creep in, that, you know, he didn't want to choke because he had this opportunity to catch Hale and Al. And I really, really liked what he said. And, you know, he's very much a man of faith. I've spent a little bit of time with him, played 9 holes with him about 8 years ago, I think, 7, 8 years ago now. And a guy that was really easy to enjoy, just easygoing, very pleasant man, a little quiet, but that's okay. Just a guy that had told good stories, but cared about what you had to say and could razz you, but wasn't trying to be mean to you. It just a guy made the 9-hole experience with him was like, all right, I like this guy. And I want to tell people about how enjoyable he is to be around and how skilled he is and how thoughtful he is. And the faith component, hey, some people like that. Some people don't care about it. But I think it is important for him, and it greatly influences his personality. I mean, he talked about, I think he wrote down a verse from Proverbs and trusting God and what that really meant for him coming down the stretch and knowing that if he trusted in his faith and frankly in himself, because I think faith is really a form of self-confidence, that religious faith, I mean, is a form of self-confidence, that things were going to work out. And he congratulated Hale Irwin on an incredible run. Like, hey, you know, yes, I accomplished this today, but congratulations to Hale Irwin on an incredible career and what he accomplished on this 50-plus tour. And yes, I know it's not the PGA Tour. I know it's not the DP World Tour or anything like that. And you're like, oh, well, they just play 54-hole events with a bunch of older guys. But they're still competitive, and you still have to play high-level golf, particularly once you get past the age of 55. Things get really tricky on that tour because you start to lose distance. Maybe you start to lose some interest, and you have this crop of relatively younger players who have just come off of competing on the PGA Tour in many cases, trying to beat your brains in, and you're fighting time both ways. You're fighting against your peers, and you're fighting against yourself. And still, in the right occasions, he is the best player. That is inspiration. If it's not, I don't understand what is. So, hats off to Bernhard Langer on an incredible career. This isn't even necessarily the end. He still has probably one or two more in him, and maybe he sets the all-time record, and I think that would probably be apropos for him to do so. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Thank you so much for taking time to listen to us. If you listen to us through a podcast service, please give us a 5-star review. It helps us reach more people. We are in like year 21 of this show this year, on and off. I mean, we haven't done it every year. The years I was at NBC, I didn't do it. Years I was Golf Channel, I didn't do it. But there were some times when I've been running this site that I haven't done it, Golf News Net. But it's really cool to have been able to do this show for this long and see what has and hasn't changed about golf, and to have the conversation with all of you over the years is always something I enjoy. We will be back next week with another show. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. Until then, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.